says almost that he's like, I'm giving you to them, lead them, be a beacon to them.
He says they wish to be a good planet, they just haven't seen the light.
And Superman says, no, I'm going to step in and save them.
I'm giving you to them, the people of Earth, I'm giving you to them, but don't interfere in anything.
And then my question for discussion would be, what is the light? I think in today's world, it's really important to talk a little bit about how important it is to have a sense of objective morality. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Watch Well podcast. My name is Parker, and this is my co-host, Nick. How's your week?
Great week, yeah. Happy to be doing this review, having a guest who you'll introduce in a second, but yeah, I'm excited about this. This is going to be fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's much easier to ask you about your week when we haven't done three episode recordings in a row.
In a day, yeah.
In one day.
Right, yeah.
So you actually have a week to talk about in more than just one episode, so a lot of fun. I'm excited. Follow us on social media, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. At WatchWellPod on Twitter, and then you can follow me at Real Parker Brown on Twitter, which I think is called X now.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of depends on who you talk to. We got all that out of the way. I'd like to introduce our guest. Our guest today is the one and only Mr. Keith Foskey. He's the pastor of Sovereign Grace Family Church in Jacksonville, Florida, and the host of the Your Calvinist podcast, a weekly podcast about scripture, culture, and media from a Reformed perspective. And he's known on YouTube as @YourCalvinist. And you can also check him out on X @YourCalvinist. So did I miss anything? Do you want to, where people can find you?
Well, the easiest place, if people are looking to get in touch with me, KeithFoskey.com is a new website. It's actually just my name, and you can access all of my social media links and our shirt store and all that stuff there, as well as send me an email directly. It comes right to my phone, and I usually respond within a few days. So,
that's awesome. That's awesome. Cool. Cool. So now that we got that out of the way, let's jump right into the movie. We're going to be reviewing Keith's selection.
Mm-hmm.
And Keith, Superman 78? Superman, guys. Yes, Superman.
Absolutely.
With the glow-in-the-dark shirt.
The glow-in-the-dark is key.
Yep.
Yes.
That's super awesome, man. That's awesome. Cool. So, Nick, do you want to start with the rundown here?
Yeah, so it's rated PG, and just for context for people, this is before the PG-13 rating existed. I would imagine if it was made today, it'd be like just about any other superhero movie rated PG-13. Directed by Richard Donner, released in 1978. Made $134 million at the box office in 1978, which means today that's probably like $500 or $600 million in today's dollars. So it was, even though that doesn't sound like it stacks up to modern movies, it absolutely does in terms of the number of people who went to see this movie and how big of a hit it was. Received very, very good reviews from both critics and audiences. So, you know, I know Rotten Tomatoes isn't the best source nowadays, but the Rotten Tomatoes score is 94%. So 94% of critics call it a great movie. And then 86% for the audience score. IMDb, 7.4 out of 10. And then Letterboxd, 3.7 out of 5. So by all accounts, very good movie. On Rotten Tomatoes, one of the highest rated superhero movies that exists even still today. So that's the rundown of the film. But I also just want to take a second to highlight the director, because when you're watching a film and you don't want to just check out and, you know, take what it's giving you, but if you want to actually think about what are the messages and themes, it's a really good idea to pay attention to who's making it, who is making this film. And then you can also look, if it's a pre-existing character like this is, comic books, you can look at the history of the character and things like that as well. But Richard Donner is probably one of the most accomplished directors in film history, has a huge filmography of a ton of really popular movies, including Superman, the Lethal Weapon series, all kinds of really popular movies. And I just have this little short snippet to read here about his legacy and impact on cinema. It says, Richard Donner's legacy lies in his ability to create memorable adventures, inspire fellow filmmakers, and entertain audiences across generations.
Wow.
So, I mean, if you were to look, he has a 50-year, I think he died in 2012 or something like that, but his career spanned 50 years. So lots of movies. If you go and look at his filmography, you can probably learn at least something about his worldview, and you can see some of the things that he, some of the trends that are consistent across his filmography. So just want to throw that out there with him. So that's Richard Donner.
Interesting. Super cool. Keith, I'm actually interested in your perspective. For IMDb, 7.4 out of 10. I think from the little I know you, you're going to disagree with that rating.
Well, I think that it's fair in that it's taking into account probably the mindset of people who are looking at this from a now looking back perspective versus where I'm coming from. I was born 2 years after this movie came out. So okay. This, I was born in 1980. So I grew up with this as the seminal superhero movie. And so for me, there's the nostalgia part that I admit creates within me an understanding that this is better than the others because, and I'll talk about why I think it's better in a bit, but ultimately when someone compares this movie to something like Endgame, you know, when someone mm-hmm. compares this movie to something like that, the certainly the effects and the intricacy of the story of something like Endgame certainly dwarfs a movie like this because we've come so far in filmmaking. We've come so far in 40 years of filmmaking. The game has changed. And so I understand where it falls in the minds of many people. Most people who are giving IMDb scores are probably going to be, you know, within that 20 to 30, maybe 40-year-old range. They didn't grow up yeah. with this. They haven't seen the evolution. They don't know how this movie inspired other movies and how it created a genre that didn't exist prior to that. That's why it's where it is. But I that's why I think it should be higher, but I understand why it's not. So that's my yeah. thinking.
I think that's very yeah. fair for sure.
I would actually say, you know, we were watching this together last night, and I've seen it countless times. But one of the things that popped in my mind as we were watching it was just trying to imagine, okay, what would it have been like seeing these effects in the theater in 1978?
Absolutely.
Like, how much would my mind have been blown at the time that they were able to do these flying scenes and, you know, the destruction of Krypton? And the spacecraft yeah. flying through space as, you know, that's transitioning and Superman is aging a little.
Or even when he catches the helicopter.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He even things like yeah. the helicopter and he puts it back up on top of the building.
Right.
Like,
yeah. So by today's standards, you can kind of see some of the, you know, some of the flaws and some of like how, you know, you can looks like a miniature model and you can see some of that. But it's still amazing to watch and think about, okay, when you put this in its context, in its time, how amazing these effects would have been for people who are watching it, you know, when it came out in theaters. It's just incredible.
And creating those effects as well would have been much more difficult then. It would have taken much more cinematography skill because now you can just throw in a green screen. And I mean, there's still skill yep. involved with creating digital effects and all of that, but it's much more manual back then. I mean, I'm sure they used miniature 3D models and all of these things to film some of the scenes of, you know, more of like a drone shot or something far away or, you know, of a landscape or something. But
yeah,
but definitely, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Can I mention just something?
Yeah, go for it.
Yesterday I was watching a little short documentary on the film Spaceballs. Now I know that's a weird, yeah. maybe I'll come back and we'll do a Spaceballs episode, but,
yeah, we'd love it.
But in this little documentary, I don't know if you remember Spaceballs, but the whole joke was the guy's flying an RV through space like it was a yeah. You know, a Winnebago spaceship, mm-hmm. and when they were showing the documentary, there was a miniature Winnebago on set. It was about maybe like a third scale Winnebago that they were flying mm-hmm. through, and I'm like, no one would build a third scale Winnebago spaceship today. They would just create it.
Yeah.
They would
yeah.
create it in a computer program, and movies have become. And I don't mean this in a way that's meant to be derogatory, but hear me out. Movies today have become fancy cartoons. Because,
oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Because we've gone away from practical effects and moved into all digital effects. And what happens with digital effects is you realize you're really watching something that someone has created in a program, like a drawing program, and therefore it loses some of that feel of the realness. The right. Mm-hmm. In the Superman film, the poster, which I have in my here, the tagline of the poster was, "You will believe a man can fly." That was the tagline. And if you specifically watch the flying scene right after the helicopter, when he lays the helicopter down, Margot Kidder, Lois Lane, she falls down, she faints. He flies away and he is on ropes. I've seen the making of it and how they did it. He's literally flying the same way David Copperfield flew in his magic act. I don't know if you've ever seen David Copperfield's magic act where he flew. He basically is using wires. He flew on wires and he really looked like he was flying. It didn't look like a digital effect. It didn't look like a cartoon. It looked like a dude lifted up off the ground and flew away. And that, to me, is the best looking scene of the whole movie as far as just what looked like that really happened. And so, I imagine in 1978, people were losing their minds.
Yeah. And there are some very few. I totally agree with you that most, at least big budget modern movies, are essentially just really fancy cartoons. There's just a few directors who don't follow that path. So, like, you know, Christopher Nolan with the Dark Knight series, very few actual digital effects. It's all practical. And, you know, they're really crashing a plane and a helicopter and flipping a semi and doing all that stuff. But it's incredibly rare.
J.J. Yeah. Abrams would probably.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I love it. I love it when they're willing to do it. And you know, I know he's a little crazy, but you know, someone like Tom Cruise who goes out of his way to do practical
absolutely.
Effects.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, he strapped himself to the side of a plane and really took off. I mean, who does that, right? You don't have to do it, but he did it. Yeah.
And in 20 years, when somebody's watching that scene, it'll still feel real.
It was. Yes.
Yeah. But the digital cartoon animated effects in 30 years with all those advancements that happen over that time, it's probably not going to feel real anymore. Like Endgame will not, even though it's, I mean, I really enjoyed Endgame.
Oh, sure.
But even, you know, it's a great movie, but it won't hold up 20, 30, 40 years in the future the way that practical effects will, because it's just not real, right? And you can try to make it look as real as you can, but you can't get past the fact that it's still not real. So,
And let me throw this out. I want to say, too, and I'm not trying to poo-poo on Endgame, because, again, it was a great film. When I watched the Infinity War and Endgame back, you know, in the theater, I went to both. I mean, I cried. I get emotional in movies. Don't judge me. But
you're good.
Like there's emotion in the movie, and it's a really good storytelling. But I have not rewatched those movies the same way I've rewatched Superman 78. I've watched Superman 78 so many times. Like I can walk you through the movie pace by pace. You know, you guys said you watched it last night. I didn't need to. It's one of my favorite movies, and like I just know the movie well, and I don't have that same connection to some of these newer movies. Even though I would grant there are certain things that are better. They just haven't connected with me the same way. Maybe it's my age. This was again seminal for me. This created
That first feeling of when something like just blows your mind, and it just sticks, and I want to be that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so you said you were born 2 years after this came out. Is that what you said, or two years before?
Okay, no, 1980. Yep,
I'm a
Reagan baby.
Okay, so this is probably on TV all the time as you're growing up, right? Like I remember even in the 90s when I was growing up, this and Superman 2 was on TV nonstop, like every Saturday. One of these two Superman movies would be on, and I would watch it. So things tend to stick with you longer when you've experienced them at that age, at a younger age, and things like that. So yeah, that probably plays a role in your love of this movie and things like that. But yeah, good stuff.
That's really good stuff. All right, so synopsis.
Yep, I'm finding it. Just before the destruction of the planet Krypton, scientist Jor-El sends his infant son Kal-El on a spaceship to Earth. Raised by kindly farmers Jonathan and Martha Kent, young Clark discovers the source of his superhuman powers and moves to Metropolis to fight evil. As Superman, he battles the villainous Lex Luthor, while as novice reporter Clark Kent, he attempts to woo co-worker Lois Lane. So that is the synopsis of the movie. We've already talked about Richard Donner. Would you say this is Richard Donner's best film that you've seen? So when you take into account like Lethal Weapon, Superman.
Yeah, I'm very I have a lot of love for the Lethal Weapon films, specifically the first one. I say it's my favorite Christmas movie, but that's a big joke because everybody argues about Die Hard being a Christmas movie.
So, Die Hard, so, yeah.
Lethal Weapon and Lethal Weapon 2 both took place at Christmas. So, I'm a huge Lethal Weapon fan. I love the chemistry of Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, especially in the first one when he was dealing with psychosis and suicide and suicidal thoughts and those. Again, not talking about that movie, but yeah, I really enjoy movies. And so there's a lot of depth.
Don't feel bad. We talk about other movies when we review movies all the time.
Yeah,
it's completely normal.
the scene where Riggs is has the gun in his mouth. That's hard not to really, knowing how many people have succumbed to that. Knowing how many people have,
you
know, especially law enforcement and military and everything. That scene's very, very powerful. So
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So another just quick fact about that I thought was interesting. So this was actually scheduled to be filmed at the same time as Superman 2. So Superman 1, 1978, but then halfway through, or three quarters, however far they were through Superman 2, Richard Donner was fired.
Yep.
Now I have no idea why he was fired and why he didn't finish the movie, but then so Superman 2, I can't remember the name of the new director, but somebody else took over and finished out that film.
They decided not
to give Richard Donner any credit for the film. So he's not credited in any capacity on Superman 2 until, you know, you remember a few years ago, everyone was going crazy about the Snyder Cut, right? Let's get the Snyder Cut of Justice League. Well, that happened long before that ever happened with Zack Snyder with Richard Donner, because everyone wanted the Donner cut of Superman 2.
So interesting.
So that's been released as an alternate version of Superman 2. And one of the reasons I bring that up is because as a kid, I always enjoyed Superman 2 with General Zod more than Superman 1. Yep. So that was just my perspective as a kid, is I really liked the storyline and Zod and his... and the two others coming into Metropolis and seeking revenge and all of that. I just really enjoyed that storyline. But so this movie, total success, right? Critical success, audience success, box office success. Yet all of that isn't enough to save the director from being fired, even though he's one of the most famous directors to ever exist. So I just, I find that very interesting. And I don't know if I've ever seen the Donner cut of Superman 2. I've only seen the version that's on, that has been on TV. So,
it is. I would, because I have a lot to say on this subject, and I don't want to
go for it
too far. The arguments over why he was fired, that's hard to get into because a lot of speculation on that, a lot of back and forth and different opinions. But Richard Lester brought more of a campiness to the second movie, and he played up some bits that were more comedic, which were sort of take you out of the film. Like the very beginning of the movie is like there's a lot of slapstick things happening, paint falling on people and stuff is when things are happening, and so that was all Richard Lester. So when you watch this, when you watch the Donner cut, a lot of that stuff's gone. It takes a much more serious approach to the movie. In some ways I prefer the Lester cut because that's what I grew up with. So seeing the Donner cut is like seeing just a different movie. Like there's so many different parts. But it was filmed at the same time. It was filmed for the purpose of creating a movie and then a year later having the sequel or 2 years, however long. But it was the intention was we're going to have this is going to be they knew they had something here. This was going to be more than just a one off. And what's interesting about that is a similar thing happened with the second and third installment of Back to the Future. They filmed both of those at the same time. And when you know you're going to have that creates a great continuity between two films. Like in the second and third Back to the Future, there's just so much continuity because they knew what they were doing. They didn't have to create a sequel out of thin air. And so it is with Superman 1 and 2. Superman 1 introduces General Zod, which is Terrence Stamp, at the very beginning of Superman 1.
The opening.
And you wonder, like, who is this guy? He never comes back into play in the first movie.
Well, and you're expecting him to come back,
and never does because they're setting up the sequel. Which I mean, that's genius. When you know you're doing.
I mean,
that.
It was it's kind of like MCU before MCU.
That's right.
Except for instead of happening post credit, it's happening in the opening scene of the film.
Right. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. Absolutely.
By the time the end of the movie comes, you've forgotten that guy, and then in the next movie, boom, he's back.
There he is.
Which is super interesting, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm going to, full disclosure, I have never seen Superman 2.
Okay.
So, but what's interesting is the way you guys are talking is the Superman, we were talking last night about the Superman movie Man of Steel. It seems as if it took it stole the beginning of Superman 1978, but then was Superman 2.
Because General Zod, I mean, it definitely took a ton of story from the original Superman
Because you got the essentially, because I was like, dude, this is exactly like Man of Steel.
Yeah. There's just some minor details that are different.
The rest of the movie was different. And then the way you guys are talking about Superman 2 was almost as if they just took the beginning of Superman 1 out and put it in Superman 2 to make a fully robust thing.
Yeah. You could definitely say that because there's a lot of similarity there.
Yeah. And my thought on Man of Steel, just real quick on that, is Man of Steel was 20 minutes too long. And because the fight with General Zod, I think takes the whole movie takes me out of the movie. I think the movie should have ended with General Zod's defeat. And because he's defeated when the Earth engine, Kryptonian, the thing that's trying to create the Kryptonian atmosphere is taken away. And when that's taken away, General Zod is on his knees. He's defeated. That would have been a great end to the movie. Right. But instead, they fight for another 20 minutes. Superman kills him. Yeah. They basically have 15 9/11s that happen all, through
all
downtown.
Right there.
Yeah. And so that takes me out. I don't enjoy that last part. And then of course the rest of the next movie, the Batman v Superman, and then is all based on that awful part. Yeah. And it creates this new thing. And it just, Superman loves Metropolis. And the fact that he is responsible for destroying 9/10 of the city is really
doesn't make sense.
It really takes me. I love Henry Cavill. I think he's a great actor. I think his Mission Impossible stuff. I mean, and his Superman stuff. He looks like Superman. So, and certainly has a very winsome personality. He seems like a very genuine dude. So I'm not saying,
I will say, I'll throw one thing in here though, because, I could pretty much say my opinion of the whole Justice League thing was absolutely horrible, really bad. But I will say I would probably put this in top 10 favorite scenes of all time, and I know that's saying a lot. But the moment when the Flash takes off running when they're at the statue, and they're trying to fight Superman, in I can't remember which movie this was, but when they're trying to get the Justice League together.
Yep.
And Flash takes off, and he's fighting, and then all of a sudden you see his head turn to catch up with the Flash. I thought that was, talk about mind-blown moment.
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. Just
I love
to show how powerful Superman is. So cool.
And the Flash looking at him like, he can follow me with his eyes.
It's so awesome. Yeah. You just see his eyes go. It's so cool. I love that scene.
So I actually didn't watch Justice League.
Love that scene.
I didn't even watch it because I wasn't interested because Batman versus Superman in my mind was so bad.
It was
didn't enjoy it. So,
but what they did well was demonstrate how powerful Superman was.
Sure.
The
yeah.
One,
so Keith,
I'm sorry. I don't want to go too far.
You're good. No, go ahead. Go for it.
You were right, though. They truncated the stories, and that has been DC's problem, is they're so invested in catching up with Marvel 20 years too late. And Marvel started this cinematic universe and was smart enough to do one character at a time, character building, world building, universe building, one step at a time. And they've gone off the rails now with all the different, you can't follow it anymore because it's multiverse and all this stuff. It's no fun anymore because there's no continuity. But, you know, eventually things have to die. We know that. Yeah. But with
it
DC,
should have died at Endgame.
Yeah, that would have been the perfect, like, this is it. But, you know, now you can't enjoy anything. But
that's so true.
But with Superman, the Justice League and all that, they put Doomsday in way too early. The Doomsday character is you don't have a beloved Superman to kill. You have a Superman that's been active for less than a minute, and now you're going to kill him, and everybody's supposed to be sad. They don't even know who this guy is. And so the whole Doomsday narrative from 93, 94, I think, is when the comic books came out. I have every comic book from that year. I've been a Superman fan all my life. So, like, I bought off the newsstand every comic book from the year that Superman died, and they're still in a box in my house. And that storyline is based on an established Justice League, because Doomsday kills several Justice League members before he gets to Superman. That's the point, is everybody's trying to stop this thing and no one can stop it. Finally, Superman has to kill himself to kill Doomsday. And that leads to this death in Metropolis where Lois is holding his dead body. This perfect scene that was, I think it was Dan Jurgens who drew it. It's this beautiful scene of Superman being dead on the ground, shirt ripped off. You know, he is dead. And then the whole funeral for a friend. There was an entire series of comic books just about the funeral of Superman. It's wild. It was, and to have it truncated into one movie was like, for a fan, it's like, don't let me write this.
Absolutely. Sometimes the fans would be better at writing.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Sometimes.
But it's like, at that point, all you have to do to make it successful and make it good is just faithfully adapt it. Be faithful to what the source material is. And you know, then you would have people interested. You would have people that come watch it, and you wouldn't have the flops that DC has kind of been known for over the last however many years. But yeah, just faithfully adapt it. This is a ready-made story that's already perfect for the screen. Just make it, right? Like, that would have been, even if you're copying it shot for shot from the comics, just do that, and you're good to go.
That's right.
Yeah. So give us your review of Superman 1978. I know we've gotten into it a little bit, but if you could just, you know, like a sentence or two of what you think of the film. Or longer, if you want to go longer, that's fine too.
It created the superhero genre. Prior to this movie, that didn't really exist. So even though there was, you know, the campy Batman movie that came out of the TV show with Adam West, and I love Adam West. I love what he was trying to do. He was trying to make Batman for families, and he did a good job. I think 89 Batman is the benchmark that everything built on after that, though. Nolan, you know, even I didn't hate Ben Affleck. I thought Ben Affleck was a good Batman. Even though the movie suffered because of writing, I think he did a good job. So, but Superman started it all. 78 Superman creates a genre that didn't exist and establishes that you can have a legitimate, and I'm going to use this phrase, grown-up movie about a superhero that's not just for kids. It's not George Reeves, you know, who was great, but George Reeves, again, was a TV show, sort of like Adam West, who was, you know, he was smiles at the end and everybody laughs, you know, oh, Jimmy, ha, 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 oh, Lois, you know, that's kind of the way Christopher Reeves created a character that people make fun of today, but people don't understand the reality. People say no one could just put on glasses and fool people into believing that he's not really Superman. I mean, he looks just like him, and he's working with the greatest investigative journalist in the world, Lois Lane. How does she not see who he is? And the answer to that is Christopher Reeves shows us why. Because Christopher Reeves played two different characters. He played Superman. He was not playing Clark Kent. And when he played Clark Kent, he was not playing Superman. He demonstrated his range as an actor by playing two parts in the same film. And in doing so, he demonstrated how this works. Clark Kent was a goofball. He slouched. He parted his hair on the other side. All these things, which may seem like subtle and incidental and non-memorable things, everything mattered. No one would see this guy tripping down the road and say, yeah, that's Superman.
That's Superman.
And Lois's blindness has always, I think, could always be attributed to her love for Superman. There's no way this goofball who sits next to me is the man that I love with all my heart. And the movie is really their love story. Love story of Clark wants Lois to love him and Lois wants to love Superman. And he could easily have Lois if he just said, I'm Superman. He doesn't because he wants her to love Clark, because Clark is who he really is. This is it. The difference between Batman and Superman is Batman is Batman and Bruce Wayne is the costume. Bruce Wayne is
the
mask.
100%.
In fact, there's a scene in a comic book where the Wonder Woman has her lasso of truth and wrapped around Batman. And she says, tell me your name. And he says, Batman. That's the truth. That's who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But with Superman, it's the opposite. Superman is really Clark Kent. He is the byproduct. And this is going to bring us into some of our theology later. He is the byproduct of two fathers, but the father that influenced who he is as a man was Jonathan Kent. The father who gave him his power is Jor-El, but the father who gave him his person is Clark or is Jonathan. And we see the character who plays Jonathan in the movie. He's the older man, and I hate that he died, because I this is one area where I think, and I'm going to bring up. Again, the TV show, I loved Lois and Clark, the newest of the Adventures of Superman with Dean Cain.
Watched it every week when I was growing up.
I loved Dean Cain. But the best part of that movie was his parents were alive and his parents were active in his life, and they helped him make moral decisions. They helped him create to establish who he was as a person, this farm town boy. And the guy who played his dad was, I can't remember his name right now, but that actor was just so fantastic. And then of course in Smallville you had Snyder playing who was the guy from Dukes of Hazzard. I forget his first name. Is it Tom Snyder? No. Anyway,
that sounds right. Yeah, that sounds right. I'm not sure though.
But I think they did a good job with that too. He's trying to teach his son how to be a good man. And so Clark is truly who Superman is, and Superman's just a costume. So all this, there's just so much about this movie. Oh, and last thing for my review, the ending of Superman 1 was actually filmed. It was supposed to be the ending of Superman 2. When he flies around the Earth and turns back time, that's supposed to be how he defeated General Zod. That was one of the major changes of the film. Was that him flying back in time was supposed to be saved for the second film. They used it in the first film, and that became the MacGuffin that kind of hurt the series, because what happens after that is everybody says, well, if anything really bad happens, Superman could just turn back time. And that became a problem later, because the question was, well, why didn't Superman just do that again? And the answer from fans has been like, well, it only worked because it was Lois who was dead and he loves Lois so much. Therefore, he was able to do this one time burst of energy that he was able to do this miraculous thing. But it's the part that everybody makes fun of, you know.
Yeah.
If you can fly back in time and start over, then you really have no problem.
You can do it.
You can't be defeated.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, so watching it, I felt like that. I understand the kind of criticism of how does that then extend to, you know, future films that are in the series, and why doesn't he just do that all the time? But the agony that he experiences and, you know, lets out that scream when Lois dies, right, in that earthquake, it makes sense to me that that Superman doing that would happen right there in that moment. Now, I mean, obviously, if he can do it, then he can do it all the time, or, I mean, you would assume. But, you know, just viewing it as a standalone film, this is just this Superman movie, I think it works. I just feel like it fits the moment extremely well that Superman would be, like, just in this point of just absolute agony because this is the woman he loves who just died, and knowing that he didn't save her in that moment, right? He did not save her from dying just then, knowing that he can save just about anybody, but he can't save her then. And then to then go and turn back time in the way that he does, to me, it fits the story perfectly. Now, obviously, I don't know what the ending would have been. I mean, maybe you have some insight into that, but I don't know what it would have originally been and what they changed it from. But I think it worked, if I'm just viewing this as a standalone film.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure how it was supposed to go. I just know that having watched some documentaries on it, it said this was supposed to be how he defeated General Zod. Because remember, General Zod has the same powers as him. And that made it difficult. How are you going to defeat somebody who can't be defeated? And I do think the end of Superman 2 is a little lackluster. How they end up, how he ends up defeating him becomes a little weird because he, you know, he throws him down the cavern and you're like, well, is he still alive? Is he dead? What happened? So anyway, but it's still great. I still love it. It's just, like, kind of makes you wonder, like,
yeah,
it's interesting, those decisions that are made when you're making a movie and how that they can affect the continuity of the film later, if it's a trilogy or if there's a sequel or just interesting.
Yeah. Well, especially when you're filming it as one and you have a plan. So you're filming these scenes and you're filming it as one. I'm sure you're using certain locations and things. And you, even if something's not happening until two, you want to film it when you're filming at that location.
Yeah.
And then to take some of those scenes and reorganize them. Yeah, that's interesting to think about. So my review is, I think it's fantastic. I love Superman 1. I think it's a fantastic movie. And it doesn't get the credit it deserves for being the film that probably influenced every single superhero film to come after. You know, I've heard Christopher Nolan talk about when he signed up to direct Batman Begins, how Donner's Superman in 1978 was the model for how he cast people. Like, you know, in Superman, you have Marlon Brando on screen for a very short period of time, but his presence adds weight to that role. So Nolan cast Morgan Freeman and he cast Michael Caine to be Alfred. So, like, to create that aura of importance and weight to those characters so that it means more, even though the main character is basically an unknown. Like, Christian Bale wasn't very well known. Christopher Reeves wasn't very well known when he was cast. But the surrounding cast, the supporting cast, adds weight and aura to the film. And I think a lot of superhero movies have tried to follow that. Even Man of Steel, casting Kevin Costner and Russell Crowe as the two father characters. And
I thought that was great.
Who plays Martha Kent in Man of Steel?
Diane Lane.
Yep.
Yeah, Diane Lane. Yeah. So, like, all of these well-known actors in these supporting roles, and it does. It adds weight and credibility to the film. I mean, Marlon Brando from Godfather. So, you know, you have this serious actor. And like you said, it proved that you can make an adult superhero movie, like a grown-up superhero movie, and having those actors in those roles added to that perception. So, it doesn't get the credit it deserves. A lot of people look to the newer X-Men and not the newer ones, but the ones, you know, early 2000s and early 2000s Spider-Man as kind of the films that started off the comic book movie trend. But I think you can attribute all of that to this one, to 1978 Superman.
I don't think that I can add anything in terms of my review that you guys haven't already said, so... I agree wholeheartedly with the dichotomy between Batman being Batman and the mask being Bruce Wayne. And then in this movie, the comparison would be Superman is the mask and Clark Kent is the actual character.
Yeah.
100% agree with that.
Yep.
And can I add just one last thing before we move to the next? I know I'm taking a lot of time.
Yeah, you're good.
One of the great character or one of the greatest actors ever to play the character of Lex Luthor in Gene Hackman. I can't believe I haven't said this yet, but Gene Hackman, one of my greatest, one of my favorite, I mean, I love so many actors, but Gene Hackman just has a particular way of coming across, and he was comedic, but sinister. And the thing, the greatest scene for him was when Miss Tessmacher, she says, "My mother lives in Hackensack," and he looks at his watch and he says, he just shakes his head. That is cold. That is ice water in your veins. And he just doesn't care. He's like, "My mother lives." No, not anymore.
No, she doesn't. Not anymore. Not
and I mean, just dude was awesome. And had so some great lines when he said, I can't believe your brain produces enough energy to move your feet." He's talking to his henchmen. I've used that as an insult. Yeah. This is a great line.
It's so good.
That's a great cut. So, anyway, so I just had to mention him. And again, you had Ned Beatty playing Otis. Ned Beatty's, you just talked about it, having great actors. Ned Beatty is a phenomenal actor, and he's playing a goofball, but he's nailing it. He's being chased by the guys.
Yeah.
And Lex Luthor says they followed you, and he goes, like he didn't know it. He's like looking for. I'm sorry. I just the everything I love. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, you're good. We love the passion. We love movies too, man. One of my favorite Gene Hackman movies is Enemy of the State. I think he did so good in that movie with Will Smith, and how he was just that grumpy old man that just wants to be left alone. Like, so good delivering.
I love Unforgiven. I don't know if you guys are into Westerns, but I would say Tombstone, Unforgiven, you know, are right up there in some of the top ever. And just his again, ice water in his veins.
He's the bad guy,
you know, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what are we thinking for, if we're going to try to watch well, we're going to look at the movie and worldviews and theology, where would I don't know if you want to start Parker or Keith, but where would we go with that? Like, what are some of observations and things that you would look for in Superman?
I kind of want to know. I want to let Keith go first.
Okay.
Is that cool?
Yeah, and I hope that I'm going to do this right, because I hope I'm
sure you'll do great.
What you guys are looking for. I think there's several things. Superman has always been supposed to be, as a character, a representation of righteousness. Superman does what is right. He doesn't. One of the lines of the movie is, "I never lie," which is not true because he plays Clark Kent. But I guess he never goes and says, "I'm not Superman," right? Like he never says those words. So, but in his righteousness is based on his understanding of how he was brought up. There's a right way and a wrong way. And the tagline used to be, "Superman fights for truth, justice, and the American way." American way has been taken out of subsequent, you know, it's not used anymore because people don't think there is a right American right way. But there was a time when that type of righteousness, we wanted to be a righteous people. You know, and the idea was this character represented a righteous man, a man who had the power to do good and did good. You know, they say power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But with Superman, you have a character who has unlimited power in almost every area and yet is not corruptible. And so that's what from a theological perspective, it's trying to represent righteousness as Superman being the righteous one. And you can't help but step back and see a Christ motif for that. And a lot of people have made the comparisons. Absolutely. You know, a father sends his son into the world to be a savior, and that son is then raised by another father who instills in him certain values and things. And it does, you know, sort of remind people of the, you know, God sending Christ into the world. Christ is raised by Joseph, and there are these, you know, there are these connection points where the story is following this model not overtly, you know, Superman doesn't get hung on the cross, right? But at the same time, he's seeking to do right in an unrighteous world. He's seeking to be the righteous man. And so I think that is the, if you will, the theological perspective. It's looking at Superman as the righteous man sent into the world to save people. And that would point toward, of course, the greater and more, certainly much more valuable story of Christ, who came into the world, lived a righteous life for 30 years, died a substitutionary death to save those who believe in him. And that's my connection point for that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And he even comes from the heavens, right? Like he's even sent down from the heavens, essentially, you know, like.
And there's a line where
otherworldly.
Yeah, there's a line where Jor-El says, and I'm giving you to them. I'm like I'm sending you, like, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. Jor-El says almost that, he's like, I'm giving you to them, lead them, be a beacon to them, you know, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Essentially be a light. And Jesus, you know, in scripture, Jesus says, I am the light. Right. So,
and
yeah.
I'm not making this up. I have it written down. I can prove it. So my big takeaway was the line that Jor-El is saying as Superman is in transit, we'll say. He says, they wish to be a good planet. They just haven't seen the light. And then my question for discussion would be, what is the light that Superman can give? And you walked right into that. So maybe I should have went first.
So the answer would be then Superman's righteousness that he represents, and that aspect of his character is being given to the world that he's there to protect and save. And but it's also interesting that Jor-El tells, so, you know, has that loop of audio playing while Superman is an infant in the spacecraft, about forbidden from, I don't remember the exact quote, but forbidden from interfering in history.
It was something like
something
that,
like that. I thought that was interesting because that would seem to be something, and maybe I'm viewing it in a wrong manner or interpreting it incorrectly, but that seems to be something that would be counter to that messianic connection, you know, all the other messianic saying, okay, I'm giving you to them, the people of earth, I'm giving you to them, but don't interfere in anything. Right. And it's almost as if, so the counter to that messianic imagery would be, it's almost like Superman has to disobey the direction of his actual father in order to be the hope of Metropolis and of the world. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know if I'm viewing that correctly from just looking at the film in its own kind of cohesion. And so I don't know, what would you say to that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And it is a hard point to reconcile, because it seems like I'm sending you to be a light, but don't change anything. Don't affect anything.
Yeah.
I think it's fleshed out better in a worse film. And that's Superman 4. Superman 4, I love, but it's a bad movie. It's one of my, like, guilty pleasures. I love how bad it is, because Superman 4 was Christopher Reeve's passion project. Christopher Reeve was anti-nuke. He was very much personally opposed to nuclear weapons and things like that. And so he wanted to do the film where Superman rid the world of nuclear weapons, right? Like, and I don't know if you remember Superman 4 and the whole movie is about Superman trying to rid the world of nuclear weapons, and Lex Luthor makes a man out of a nuclear bomb who can fight Superman and kill him and all that. Well, anyway, in that movie, this comes up, because Superman goes and he actually has to face the council from Krypton. It's not just Jor-El, but the whole council is saying to him, you are forbidden to interfere with the world's affairs. And one of the guys even says, you can flee to new worlds. He says, just abandon them. You can go elsewhere. You have the power to leave Earth and go to other inhabited worlds. You don't have to do this. And Clark, or Superman's character, says to the council, he says, they are being threatened with the same destruction as Krypton. Krypton exploded. They're being threatened with the same, and I cannot walk away and know that I could save them. That's so there is this where the council has decreed that Superman not interfere with human free will. And I think that's where it comes in. Humans should have the right to destroy themselves if they want to. And Superman says, no, I'm going to step in and save them. So that's where I think that fleshes that out a little more. It's about their will. It's about them being able to make the choice. You don't have the right as a superhero to come in and choose for them. And Superman says, no, I do. I live here too. Mm-hmm. This is my world too. And that's
right.
And he steps in front and he goes in front of the United Nations in that movie. Again, it's a weird movie. Superman's at the United Nations. And he says, Earth is my home too. And that's like a big like message like this. I'm here. Yeah. And I'm going to stop these nuclear weapons because I'm ultimately going to lose everything I love too if these weapons fall. So I think that idea is fleshed out later. I don't know if they had that intention. I know they didn't have that intention in the first film because Superman 4 was a Christopher Reeve passion project. They only did it because he wouldn't do another movie unless they let him do this movie. There's a whole backstory behind that. And so Superman 4 is Christopher Reeve's version of Superman, which, you know, he's a great actor, but I'm mm-hmm. not a perfect storyteller. So
yeah. And is that the one that's called Quest for Peace?
Yep. Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Okay.
Does have my favorite side character though. John Cryer plays Lex Luthor's nephew, Lenny. And if you don't know who Lenny Luthor is, just look up go to YouTube, look up Lenny Luthor's moments in Superman 4. It's the best. John Cryer is just awesome. Yeah. And so, yeah.
I'll have to check that out for sure.
So yeah, I enjoyed that one as a kid, but
yep.
Lenny Luthor.
It's been so long since I've seen it. I can't remember everything, but, yeah.
So. Yeah. I think it's really important to pinpoint, so we're talking about Superman. We're talking about parallels to a messianic figure. We're talking about how he is righteous in and of himself. And I think in today's world, it's really important to bring that to the forefront and talk a little bit about how important it is to have a sense of objective morality that is reflected from a perfect God that is outside of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, as we would all agree that moral relativism is rampant, and that's the main reason why everything is so wrong in today's culture. So I just kind of wanted to open it up to wrap on that a little bit, ask Keith your kind of thoughts on that with the movie and how it relates today and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Well, just the you know, taking America out of it for just a second, when the tagline for Superman is truth, justice in the American way, today you say, well, we stand for truth. Well, what is truth? Truth is your truth. You're living out mm-hmm. your truth. Truth is relative. Justice, what is justice? Well, it's social justice. It's equity and equality and mm-hmm. DEI and all that stuff. It's not about real, genuine justice. And so to say that you have someone who represents truth and justice is hard for people to swallow nowadays. It just doesn't seem to exist. And yeah, I think that, like you said, that's part of the problem in the world that we live in now, 40 years post the film, mm-hmm. 46 years, you know, we're mm-hmm. yeah. oh, man, we're coming up on 50 years. Wow. That's wild.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we're in a much different place as far as how we understand those concepts, and modern yeah. superheroes can't do that. Think of the modern superheroes are almost anti-heroes in that mm-hmm. they push their flaws, they push their failures, and they push mm-hmm. their brokenness. You know, Tony Stark's has these problems.
Playboy billionaire. Playboy, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And so I one time heard someone say the difference between Marvel and DC is that Marvel has characters that you can relate to, but DC has characters that you want to live up to. And I think the one among them that's the most is Superman. I think people dream about being Batman because we have a vengeance side to us. We want to see justice done by whatever means necessary at times. So there's a street justice aspect of Batman that we like. Plus, we mm-hmm. like the fact that he's human and we can relate to that. You know, Batman is just a human who really trained hard and has a lot of money. And like we could see that being like it's like Seinfeld said, right? When we look at superheroes, we're not looking at fantasies. We're looking at options. Like who's the option? And Batman's the option because he's a real dude. But Superman's mm-hmm. the icon that we want to live up to. And that's, you know, truth and justice is part of that.
Yeah.
That's really good stuff, man.
In that moment in the because I think they actually say that quote in the film, truth, justice, and the American way, right?
They do.
That has the potential to be the cheesiest, most unnatural line that anyone would ever say, but it's not, right? Like, because of who Superman is, it's genuine. Like, it seems absolutely genuine, but if Iron Man were to say something like that, you would have to believe that it's sarcastic, right? Like, if there's all these other characters, but and I really like what you're saying about the DC characters being who we try to live up to, because you can remove that
or who
quote,
we relate to,
or no, the DC or who we will try to live up to. Marvel is who we relate to.
Oh, is right? Okay. Yeah. I think yeah, I got yeah. that flipped.
Yeah. So. Like, you can, so in modern movies, you can remove that quote, truth, justice, in the American way. But if you remove the actions that Superman and the mentality and motivation that Superman has from him, he has to still be about, you know, regardless of, you know, if you remove that quote or not, he still has to be about truth, justice, and the American way, or he's not Superman anymore, right? So his actions have to show that. That's still who he is, even if, you know, you don't want to offend anybody with a quote, and you want people in China to go to the film and make a bunch of money at the box office, so you're not going to put that in there and things like that. He still has to be about that, right? Like, and you still have to have this, like what you were saying earlier, you still have to have this righteousness about him, or no one cares. Like, if he doesn't have these attributes, no one cares about Superman. No one cares about him anymore. He's not. It's not a film to try to go see and connect to or get involved in, and it's not a story that anyone will ever want to see unless he still has those characteristics and attributes. And that, and just that reality, tells us that whether we want to acknowledge it or not, we're all longing for that person outside of us who displays this perfect righteousness.
Amen.
We're all longing in our hearts, whether we suppress it or whether we are Christians and acknowledge it, we're all longing in our hearts for this person to be what we can't be, to be what we are incapable of being because we know how flawed and sinful we are. And again, even if we're not willing to say it in those terms, we know how... you know, our thoughts, and we know the ways that we fail constantly, and we want to look to someone outside of us as this image of perfection. And the reality is the fact that we're drawn to Superman proves that we also need Christ. Like, we also, our draw to Superman should direct us to the one who actually was this, right?
Amen.
The one who actually was in history and was these attributes, was righteous, was perfect, was loving, and did everything that I can't do, right? And so I just feel like our love of Superman, if we were honest with ourselves, would be a proof or evidence for the fact that we should also be looking to Christ. You know, and it's one of those moments where, you know, we suppress, you know, unbelieving people suppress the truth and unrighteousness. It's one of those moments where, being, you know, it's written on our hearts, being created in the image of God, we can't help but be drawn to that image of perfection. So yeah, I think that's my biggest takeaway from the film, is just the condition of our hearts, our imperfection, and our want and longing for that righteousness.
Yeah.
Amen. I think that was good.
That's I don't know. I think that summed it up pretty well. But we're at an hour. Keith, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and I want to congratulate you here again on 100,000 downloads. Isn't that what you posted on Twitter?
That was for our audio podcast. Yeah, we've been doing that for a few years and done well. But most people find us through YouTube. Most people find me through the comedy stuff that I do. I do a lot of funny videos, and so those have gotten a lot more attention. But yeah. The podcast is growing because of that. We're getting our audience from people say come for the funny, stay for the theology. So. Yeah,
I love that. Yeah. I love that.
And I'll just give you a quick plug. I listened to your, I think it's your most recent episode where you talk about your church and the history of your church and how you've come to more like reformed biblical focus and that transformation. I really was encouraged by that podcast and thought that story was really intriguing and fun to listen to.
Okay, yeah, I was listening. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, and I saw the God Bless the USA Bible, and I was in stitches, man. I was laughing. Yes. I was like this. I was in this coffee shop. My wife was actually running a half marathon. She did that Sunday, and I was in this coffee shop, and it was just me, another person, and the workers. And I was laughing out loud, and they were probably thought I was crazy. But yeah, the post-it note from Donald Trump's desk. It doesn't say anything. But it was on his desk. It was so good. It's like perfect. It's perfect. Yeah. So yeah, I would definitely recommend your stuff. If you guys are watching, go head over and check out Keith's YouTube channel and website for sure. And again, we really appreciate you being on, Keith.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much for having me. This has been one of the most fun hours I've had in a while, just because this is a subject I enjoy so much. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, guys, we will see you next time.